Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In episode 29, our visionary is Trisha Kumar. Trisha is a choreographer and filmmaker who moved from corporate America to Bollywood to work in the film industry. Over time, she became Mumbai's resident expert in authentic Bhangra, worked with multiple celebrities and started her journey into filmmaking. Tune in as Trisha and I talk about her passion for Bhangra, her upcoming short film and the struggles of being a female leader in male-dominated spaces.
A very lucky child. I spent most of my childhood growing up in Florida. So, you know, warm beaches and sunshine and no snow, no cold weather. And I was kind of a spoiled little girl. Like I just really had a really great childhood. I was at the beach all day in the summer, and it's just a very happy-go-lucky lifestyle. And I was a pretty big academic as well. So, you know, I did the school thing, I did the sports thing, I did the dance thing growing up.
Yeah.
And I've actually been dancing since I was six. And as I got older, those interests all started to really show in my personality and the things that I chose to do. So when I was 18, of course, I graduated high school and I went to Florida State University for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I transferred to Georgetown University in DC. And I studied economics and finance. And I honestly, for a long time, I thought, you know, I am going to be a lawyer. Like I knew when I was in high school, I was like, I want to study the law and I want to change the world. And I still do. But it wasn't until I entered the corporate world, and I did, you know, corporate America for 3 years in a variety of different roles. And I realized sitting at a desk every day wasn't giving me the kind of joy that I thought it would.
Yeah.
And up until this point, I had been dancing, you know, full-time outside of work, full-time while I was in school on a variety of different dance teams. And that was something I always loved. But, you know, as a South Asian, the performing arts isn't a viable career path.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never really considered it one. I just thought it would be something I'd do forever, and that law would be, you know, my ultimate career goal. And I wanted to work at the World Trade Organization as a dispute lawyer and advocate for different countries. And that's not where I am right now.
Yeah. And Trisha, while you were doing your corporate stint, what exactly was the point where you realized that, you know, probably this is not my thing. I should start thinking about taking dancing as a serious career choice and probably think about getting into choreography.
Well, you know, there was never a moment that I said dance is a serious career choice. It was more like I had done it for several years at that point, and I was really unhappy. Like, you know, I was going through the motions. I'd get the work done. There were a lot of days I didn't want to go to work. And I realized that I was happy and looked most forward to after work and the evenings and the weekends, when I was working harder just by dancing and practicing and gigs and weddings and all these things. And I didn't sleep on my evenings and weekends, but I loved those moments.
Yeah.
And there came a point that I was like, I can't do the job that I was in anymore. So I left, and for about a week I was looking for another office job. But while I was doing that, I was like, I don't want to run into another office job again. Let me see if I can do something else for a while. I had saved up some money. And so I was thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll just pursue dance for a year and just, you know, a year, have a good time, enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, that's kind of where it started. And I talked to my parents about it, and they're like, you know what? yeah, go for a year, have a good time. Like, you know, you've saved up enough money. And they gave me a little bit to kind of help me get started. Cause I, you know, it's a whole year of living abroad and
yeah,
pursuing something without a steady flow of income. And what was interesting is they gave me a couple of conditions, and they were like, you know, the first thing is when you're famous, you like, you gotta thank us, right? Like, gotta get famous. And then you gotta say thanks to my parents. And the second one, I was like, you know what? Easy. I'll get that done. And then the second one was you have to finish applying to law school before you go. We want you mm-hmm. to have your next steps already in place. And actually up until that point, I had been studying for the law school entrance exam. So I thought easy money. I applied to law school and then I went off to India. And I got there and it kind of transformed me. I was really like, I was living a really rough transition. It took a really long time for me to, you know, that whole process of moving and living and getting used to India. But
yeah,
I just kind of while I was there, I loved everything that I was doing. And so I was like, well, why not? I'm working with people who do this for a full-time job. And I've worked with people who have made a decades-long career out of this. Like, why not me?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell us exactly what you're doing now, where are you situated out of right now, during and before COVID? What were some of the cool projects that you've worked on?
Oh man, it breaks my heart a little bit. I had some very cool projects lined up. And I was like, you know what, 2020 is going to be my year. I feel like all of us thought 2020 was going to be our year. But right now, so I'll start from the beginning of this year. So at the start of 2020, I was known as Mumbai's Bhangra choreographer. And I had been called to consult on some movies. I have trained actors. I've trained singers. I've choreographed for, you know, smaller things here and there as well. Music videos. I've featured in a couple things that haven't come out yet. So like I've really done the whole gamut. And the thing that people most get to know me is because I partnered with a bunch of really wonderful studios in Mumbai. And, I was Mumbai's resident Bhangra choreographer, and it was a very cool life of working with celebrities. I worked with there's a lot of names I can't say, of course, because of my client list, but
yeah,
it was such a cool life. And I was like, this is great, but I don't want to just be teaching dance. I want to be creating decisions. I want to, you know, be at the top. I want to direct a film. I want to tell people how and where and what to go. I want my opinion to be there. So I was kind of working towards that. And I had a couple of very cool offers on my plate with regards to complete direction over a series of music videos. It was honestly, it was really my year. And I had a very big celebrity who we were working on bringing me onto his team full time. So of course those things did not pan out. And I had just finished a tour in Punjab to train a little bit more, get new costumes, just go and experience and take a vacation. And then COVID happened and the United States said, hey, if you're a US citizen, you have to come back. So I jumped on a plane from Punjab to Mumbai and then from Mumbai back to the US within less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
And actually everything I own in India is like still in India. I have equipment and clothes and everything. I didn't realize I'd be gone for this long. But that being said, it's my India side of the work has been on hold, but now I'm back in the US and I'm working just outside New York City. And I'm doing a lot of remote work. So of course I'm still teaching all my classes and my clients virtually. And I'm actually working on my short film. So I started a short film last year called Addiction. And it's my very first completely independent project. I'm the producer and creative director of it. Wow. And yeah, it's honestly, it's been such a journey, but because of COVID, luckily I had the time to do all of the post-production work that we need. So we shot the entire thing last year in Mumbai itself. Okay. And then this year, because of COVID, we had like some post-production delays and all these kind of, you know, standard things that happen in the industry. Yeah. And we're actually fundraising right now to finish the film. So me and my team, we're putting out a bunch of stuff. We're reaching out to sponsors and we're working on that right now. So I've got my classes, I've got my short film. I'm running a mentorship program for younger South Asians who want to get into the industry but have no idea what it looks like. So that's kind of where I am right now.
And talking about your short film Addiction, can you give us a little bit context into what the story is about, what the genre of this short film is?
Yes. So actually, it's a very cool story, if I say so myself. it is the story about addiction, but it's not the addiction that you're thinking of. We've actually just been working on our log line, which is a one sentence summary, kind of a teaser. Okay. And our teaser is: an impressionable workaholic unplugs from his mundane routine after a transformative night out.
So interesting.
It is interesting.
Now, is it a sci-fi sort of genre?
It's not a sci-fi. So it is very much based in, it's something very realistic that could happen. To anyone in any kind of thing, but the addiction is not quite what you're thinking of, and you will have to watch it to see it. But something very cool about the storytelling is we don't tell you a story. We don't say anything at all. There's no words, there's no dialogue in the film. What we've done is we are in the process of creating a soundtrack that taps into the way that you feel. So, you know, when you're dancing and you feel the bass beat going and you can kind of feel that in your chest.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing. So we want to create that experience of addiction where your heart is racing and, you know, you can't stop. You know, when you're at the club and the DJ, he builds up that tempo and then he switches to a new song before the beat drops.
Yeah.
You know how mad you get? Right? Yeah. It's frustrating. And so we want to use the music to create that same rage and passion when you watch our film.
Interesting. And is it already released? If yes, where can I watch it? And if no, when will it get released? And where all would it be available?
That is an excellent question. So it is not complete yet. As I mentioned, we're still fundraising. So the post-production process, after you finish shooting a film, so you have all of the footage and everything's all collected, then you have to go through this process of first watching everything that you've shot and then rearranging it into a cohesive story. And it's a really big process of back and forth. Yes, no, this works. Cut this, add this.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So you do that first. And then we're going to take that. Well, we're in the process of doing all of this. Then we go to our composers and they're going to use that rough cut to create the composition. So then it's a back and forth between the composers and the editors to make the music and the story line up perfectly.
Wow.
After that, once it's all done, then we have to go to more editors. So, you know, when you watch a movie, there's like, when you watch a war story, right? It's a dark and kind of sepia toned thing.
Yeah.
It's a little duller. That's called color grading. So we're going to color grade the whole film so that it has a different type of visual tone. And then after all that's done, and hopefully we get that done in the next couple of months, we want to take it to film festivals. And that's going to be the first time people can see our short film in public. So we'll take a year, we'll go through the film festival route, we'll have a premiere, and all of that will be like, I'll make sure to announce it on all my social media and stuff. But you guys will be able to see that there. And then we'll figure out where to distribute. So there's so many different platforms. The film world is a huge web of opportunities. And it's kind of crazy because you've already done all the filming, but we're still kind of at the beginning of all the different opportunities that we can choose.
Yeah. And it sounds pretty cool, Tricia.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to watch it as soon as it gets released.
I will send you a link the second it is out. I will send that to you.
Please do. And I would like to repost it on all our social media channels as well, so that if any of the audience is listening to this, they can access that link and they can watch it too.
Yes, I would absolutely love that. And we just started a social media account just for the film itself. Mm. So we're actually going to be posting a lot of teasers and a lot of really cool releases over the next couple of months. So it's called Addiction Indie. So Addiction and then INDIE, like an indie film. Mm. And that's going to be on both Twitter and Instagram. So we've already started uploading. So if you want to go ahead, just type that into your search bar and you'll be able to find us there.
Yeah. And what I'll do is I'll also put this link in the episode description so that if anybody who wants to find it can easily just click on it and find your page.
Yes, that's perfect. By all means. And send us a message if you do. Let us know that you came from this podcast.
Yeah. Trisha, you know what's interesting about you is that you were a very bright student growing up. You were an ambitious person. You started your career in the corporate world. And then you moved on to pursue your passion in dance, and you did not stop there. Right now, you're in the midst of this project where you're also teaching online classes. And also, while you're everything is involved and everything, you know, the world has sort of turned upside down because of COVID and everything that is happening. And you had to fly back and not be here physically present anymore. You're still doing all the work, including the filmmaking project that you have. To me, at least, you come across as a person who doesn't just stop, you know, who needs to just keep refueling themselves and who needs to keep working on themselves. And while in that process, keep growing. I would like to understand, what is this thing that fuels you to actually be so much productive and be in that creative zone and keep producing and creating new things?
Oh, gosh. Well, you speak very highly of me, so thank you. I'll be honest. So yes, on paper and even in this podcast, it sounds like I'm doing a lot, but I think something, I wouldn't say podcast is like social media, but this is covering the highlights, right? Mm. And so I think, especially when it comes to this world that we're in now, it looks like I'm really productive, and I am. I get a lot done, and I have a really great team supporting me, but, there are a lot of times where it is overwhelming. And, you know, I think everyone feels with quarantine and staying at home, there's all this lethargy of, I don't want to do work right now. And I'm exhausted and I give up. And that happens, you know, I'll be honest, that happens to me at least once a week. And I'm constantly like, man, you know, no one's even looking out for this. Why am I doing it? But for me, I think one is I am kind of a workaholic myself. So I kind of feel that compulsion to, like, there's a list in my mind and I always have to get through it. Like, I know it has to get done at some point, so I should start. But I think even more importantly than that is I love what I do. And even if it's tough and even if the day is terrible, even if the people I'm working with are yelling at me or being mean or, you know, I don't like the project that I'm working on, I still love what I do. Yeah. And that is something that gives me so much meaning to life, is I love the life that I'm living. Granted, you know, we could always use some more money. We could always use a palace. We could always use, you know, all these fancy things. And it's just, I love what I do. And I think if that is the feeling that you have, you can get through anything.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned about you being a workaholic. I just have a personal question to ask you. And this is just about me trying to understand your creation process and your creative process. So, Trisha, did you, like, even while you were doing your corporate stint, did you have this checklist of, you know, okay, I love dancing, let me just try out my hand in choreography. How does it pan out for me? As a career, probably let me just figure that out. And also, you know, filmmaking is something that I've always liked, and, you know, let me just try that out too. Was it something that you always had in your list, or was filmmaking something that came on later while you started on your choreography journey and you saw all these, you know, probably music videos being created and produced, and then you were like, you know, this is something that I like and let me just take this forward?
Oh, you know, it was exactly like that. I've always thought of filmmakers as I never considered that as a career path for me. I always just saw it as, oh, filmmakers, like, they must really believe in themselves and there's so much that goes on. I couldn't possibly do it. And also, I wasn't interested at the time. The going to India thing, I just knew I was 25 years old when I left the corporate world. And there was something in me that said, if I don't at least try this now, I'll never forgive myself. Mm-hmm. And I, at that moment, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to make a career out of this. It was just, I have to show up and see what happens. And that's what I've realized is, especially in the creative field, there's never going to be a right time. You're not going to go through, well, I mean, you can go to different schools for creative professions, but there's no, you've graduated, now you have to go here. Now there's a path. You have to carve it out yourself. And as I was doing the dance thing, actually, I've done a little bit of the Bollywood backup dancing, and being an Indian person in the US, we always joke that it's our dreams to be Bollywood backup dancers. Like, that's something we really want to do out here. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I got there and I started doing it. And I was like, oof, this is not the life for me. Mm-hmm. The backup dancing scene was, it is actually quite workaholic. You're in rehearsals for 12 hours a day. And even when you finish rehearsals, sometimes they'll say, oh, we've decided you have to come back in an hour. We have another 5 hours of rehearsal. And so it's a lot of execution, which is great, but it's not the decision-making that I knew I wanted to do and that I was capable of. Mm. So that's why I started shifting into choreography. The moment that I knew that I wanted to be a director and filmmaker was in 2018. So a little under a year after I first moved to India, I came back to the US for a short trip. I came here to judge a couple dance competitions and travel and for some professional training. And while I was here, I thought I wanted to put together a really cool Bhangra video. And I got 11 other girls together and we shot a very cool video to the song Illegal Weapon in Washington, D.C. And that video got a lot of traction online on Bali Shake, and it made a few rounds on different social media channels. And you can see it on YouTube as well. But in the process of putting that together, I had to hire a videographer. And then not only did I have to choreograph and train people, but I also had to cast them in the first place. Yeah. So pulling all these components together, finding a location, deciding how the camera moves, and then directing everyone to do that and doing these mini rehearsals on the spot. We shot this at a monument in Washington, D.C. So we couldn't rehearse there. We just had to rehearse separately, show up, and then make it happen. Mm. And it was in that process of, wow, I created this entire thing from scratch. I could probably do this in a short dance film.
Yeah.
And that's actually the original inspiration behind Addiction was, I'm going to create a really short, like 3-minute film, and it'll be more dance-based because that's my expertise. And then as I developed the story, it became an actual film, just kind of blew up on its own, went from a short project to what it is now. But I realized that after I left corporate, trusting my gut and my interests have done me so well along the way. And that's kind of how I got to where I was. It wasn't that I set goals cognitively.
Yeah.
But I kind of trusted my gut, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it has brought you here. It has given you, you know, so much success within the world of Bollywood.
It's given me some success. Definitely one day you're going to see choreographed by Trisha Kumar, directed by Trisha Kumar somewhere up there. But
let's not be modest, Trisha. Let's not be modest right now. And talking about Bollywood, what I actually wanted to talk to you about, you know, and especially throw some light upon, was your story as a female choreographer in a predominantly male dominated dance form, which is, you know, the Bhangra dance form. And I wanted to talk about and ask and discuss your experience in Bollywood so far as a female Bhangra choreographer.
That is a very good question. And it's something that I'm quite passionate about, actually, is one of the things that I talk about a lot is that women are capable of doing anything that we want to do. I mean, not even just in dance, but also, you know, even in filmmaking, you don't get a lot of women directors. But it's funny because people will always ask me, you know, we're looking for Bhangra dancers. And I say, okay, I'm a Bhangra dancer. They're like, no, we want men only. And I'll say, well, there aren't that many male Bhangra dancers in Mumbai, at least none that are trained that I've met yet. And hopefully one day I'll meet some. But it's interesting because I get a lot of people showing up to my classes who are like, I'm super excited. I want to learn Bhangra. And then they'll say, well, isn't it a man's dance form? Why are you teaching it?
Yeah.
And yeah. It's something that is really frustrating because the origins of Bhangra are that it is a male dance form. And, you know, historically they say Bhangra for guys, Gidda for girls, you know. That's been the stereotypical like way of looking at it.
But that's how it's been in the pop culture as well.
Right. And the pop culture, I feel like actually that brings a good point, is that Bollywood doesn't necessarily represent things very accurately. And you'll see that across even in the way that it's received in Punjab, when we see Bhangra being danced in Bollywood films, a lot of people, they'll laugh at it and they'll say, this isn't Bhangra, like, what is this? But that's because, one, there isn't that strong Bhangra presence. Like when I came onto the scene in 2017, the first thing someone told me, my first week there, they said, no one here teaches Bhangra, why aren't you doing it? This is what you need to do. Someone, a very good friend of mine, well, now he's a very good friend. He said, I want to launch you as an artist here. And every time I get people coming in my classes, I'll have people say, I've been looking for a Bhangra teacher for years. No one is around here. And there are, I've come to know of a couple other Bhangra teachers as well. But when I came on the scene, there was no one. And it's kind of cool because not only am I a woman teaching Bhangra, but I'm also apparently the forefront of the Bhangra advocacy in the Bollywood circuit. But, you know, it does suck in a lot of ways. And I'll be honest, is people say, you're a girl, you can't be doing Bhangra, or we don't want to cast you, we want a man. And
yeah,
I've even had men come take my classes, and they'll take a couple of classes and then they'll go off and teach Bhangra and say, you know, because I'm a Bhangra dude, I should be teaching, even if they haven't trained more than a couple of classes with me or from anyone else. So a lot of people will say that I don't have a place here. And that's a lot of very old school way of thinking, because the way that the community has grown and shaped now is Bhangra is celebrated by people of all genders all over the world.
Yeah.
And it's fun to be setting the precedent of women can do this, and we can do it on a larger scale. And I think just that even shows a little bit of Bollywood generally, is you always see men in leadership roles in Bollywood, and they'll be choreographing or directing or running, even on a Bollywood set. If you go on a set and you take a look around, I would guess like maybe 90% of the cast and crew are men. And even more than that, if there's not very many women on camera, it's usually only women in either hair, sometimes even in props and costumes, and then cast. But in terms of running the show, it's usually men. And that's not cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you talk about these stereotypes still existing in Bollywood, especially for Bhangra, when every third Bollywood Punjabi song has, you know, the lead actor and actresses doing Bhangra all the time. It's quite ironical, actually.
It's interesting. Well, so this goes back to something that I've been doing a lot of thinking about, and that is the way that we as Indians respect our own dance forms. And, you know, in Mumbai, for example, the most well-known dance schools, or the ones that are the most popular, the most respected, are not Indian dance schools. It's the lyrical ones, the hip-hop ones, the ballet schools. It's all Western dance forms.
Jazz.
And
contemporary
jazz,
yes,
everything. Exactly. Yeah. You know exactly what I'm talking about, which is great. And they're beautiful dance forms. But we shouldn't be holding those to the standard of those are the only dance forms that are worth learning, or that they, if they're not a Western dance form, they don't need training because it's just a ballet ballet, which is not true.
Yeah.
Some Indian dance forms, and we see this most saliently with classical dance, there's a lot of training that goes into it. And just because something is a folk dance doesn't mean that there isn't training that goes into it. So, you know, you can watch people dancing, right? Like just casually dancing. And I'm sure we've all seen this where we see someone dancing and we say, hey, that doesn't quite look right. Mm-hmm. And you may not be able to put your finger on it in the moment, but you can identify when something looks a little bit weird or looks off.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can identify that something looks weird means that there's a way to do it correctly. And there may be many ways to do it correctly, but that means there's a system and a technique to do it. And I feel like us as Indians, we don't necessarily view Indian folk forms as having technique. So I think when it comes to Bollywood, and this is totally my hypothesis here, but when it comes to Bollywood, I think they say, oh, I see the general movement, like it's left hand, left foot, whatever. It kind of looks like this. We'll throw it together. It's close enough.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is it isn't. It's not close enough.
Yeah. And Trisha, you know, this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I would like to end this recording by asking you about your own personal goals for the future, both personally and professionally. I just want to understand, how are you amidst all the creative process that you are indulged in? What are you planning to do with your personal and professional life? And on top of that, how are you keeping yourself, most importantly, a bit more hopeful, a bit more productive under COVID?
Oh man, those, again, excellent question. So as I mentioned, I don't necessarily have a checklist for the future, but I do know the principles that guide me are, of course, I want to continue uplifting women on my teams and wherever I go.
Yeah.
I also want to make sure that South Asians are getting their stories told in the global sphere. It's not just, oh, Bollywood films. There's actual stories that need to be told. And it's not about making a spectacle of being brown, but normalizing and accepting that brown people are normal people too, especially out here. So those are the things that I really want to promote and work towards in the work that I do. And whether it's, you know, becoming the main Bhangra choreographer, or it's becoming a Bollywood choreographer in America, or becoming a filmmaker, there's so many paths that honestly, you're just going to have to stay tuned, because I have no idea either. But in the immediate future, I'm going to be finishing this film. That's going to get done hopefully very, very soon. And if anyone listening is interested in participating in our fundraiser, we are offering some really cool prizes, and some people can even earn an associate producer credit on our film. Oh. So we're giving that out as really cool incentives to get people on board. And so we're fundraising, we're gonna get that film done really soon. And then of course, I have some really cool stuff coming up that I'm not quite able to tell you guys yet, but you're gonna have to stay tuned for that. In terms of maintaining hope, I'll leave you with the last little bit there.
Yes, please.
I think we never know when this pandemic is going to end. I think we keep getting different deadlines, and the fact that the target keeps moving is a little bit rough. But the cool thing is life is kind of like that, and everything is uncertain. We've just come up with this system of, at the end of this month or at the end of this year, I'm going to start a new year, I'm going to do something new. And the way I'm starting to see it is COVID is buying me more time to do the things that I want to do. And that's super exciting for me.
If you'd like to contact Trisha, you can visit trishakumar.com. That's TRISHAKUMAR.com. You can find this link and her social media handles in the episode description. Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's VISION.NARI. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's
visionari.podcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new Visionary. Have a great day.